Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was opposing you. James 4, 13 to 17, 5, 1 to 6, the word of the Lord.
Hey, over the last few weeks, we've been in this message series in the book of James, which was written by the brother of Jesus. And he's writing from this lens of what the larger tradition is called the wisdom tradition. So if you've ever read, for instance, the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount from Jesus in Matthew chapter 6, and even if you're not a Christian here, this is a great series to jump into because you're getting a view of what does wisdom look like from a Christian perspective? Whether it's the teachings of Jesus in Matthew chapter 6 or whether it's the Proverbs in the Old Testament, James is part of this broader tradition of what wisdom looks like. So we've been addressing all sorts of themes when it comes to everyday life, and what does wisdom look like? How to be a people who live with this word integrity. And if you remember, this word integrity actually comes from the same root of the word integer, which is a whole number, this idea of wholeness, that what I say with my words and how I behave with my actions, that it's actually congruent, that it's whole, that it's together. And so the book of James, it's really taught on all of these relevant topics for us. Like, how do we begin to treat one another equally? How do we use our words? What do we do with our lives when it comes to, again, living in this fashion where we live in a world that tends to focus on the veneer of what people look like on the outside, but how do we live this out with integrity? And so my hope is, and I hope over the last few weeks, whether you're a Christian or you're not, you've been listening to these different themes and you're like, yep. I actually agree with that. Or I can see why that vision for life is a really compelling vision. Now, here's the thing. James is writing all of this as the brother of Jesus, who saw Jesus grow up, and who at the beginning of his letter, he calls Jesus Lord, and I am his servant. I mean, James is basically saying, this is what I've witnessed from the brother I grew up with, that Jesus is actually Lord, and that when it comes to the way that we use our words, the way that we treat one another, the way that we go about treating people with equality where favoritism is forbidden, in all of these different ways, I have seen this in the life of Jesus. Now, today, the passage that you heard earlier that was read for us by Kimberly, some of you were listening to that, and oh man, here James is now about to go in on a very relevant topic for many of us, especially in a city like New York, because there he is basically saying, woe to all you rich people. High five your neighbor and say, woe to all you rich people. Oh snap, it's about to get real. Now, nothing is more relevant to us, especially in a town like this, than money. And yet Jesus was someone who constantly talked about this issue of money, especially as it related to poverty. And the same is true when James is now, he's talking about something super relevant. Now, here's what I imagine. Some of you, you're not even a Christian. Maybe you're checking out this church for the first time and you're like, this was the wrong week to come. Why did I show up on this week? Great, there those Christians go, talking about money again, how they want my money and all this stuff. And listen, I want to invite you, hopefully, if you can stay with us here over the next few minutes, to learn about what do Christians believe, especially when it comes to wisdom related to money. And why is James being so harsh towards rich people? Now, check this out. Look at what it says when James begins. James writes, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. I mean, this is the story of New York City. Dutch settlers who moved here really with this aim of generating wealth and more wealth. In fact, many people, I'd say, this is the story of why you moved to New York. Maybe if we added also, and hopefully fall in love, and then move to New Jersey or Florida or whatever. But I mean, isn't this true? Look at what he's saying. He's saying, today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. This is the American dream. Now, this is not unique, though, to our current time and culture. Think about it. Here, James is writing to a culture, and he's basically saying so many people, the way they approach life is, this is what life is about. It's being able to go where I want, to spend what I want, to make whatever money I can. Now, notice, though, what James says immediately after this. Look at what it says. It says, why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Ooh, he's getting real here. So he's talking about a disposition then when it comes to life and money and accumulation, where immediately he talks about this one theme. He says, what is your life? Your life is but a mist. It's here and it's gone tomorrow. Now, why in the world is James saying this? And what is he trying to communicate here, especially as he's getting at the heart, the human heart that wants to accumulate things, the human heart that wants to make money and make choices and have this personal autonomy? Why? What's James trying to say? This is what he's trying to say. He's trying to say, you will die one day. High five your neighbor and say, you will die one day. A little awkward there. Why are we asking that? I mean, this is essentially what he's saying, though. We're all going to die one day. Like, we've got all these ambitions and hopes and dreams. And the reality is, don't you know, like, your life is so short. It gets snuffed out in a moment. The same is true for you. The same is true for me. There's no one that's exempt from the reality that the world and life and the universe is bigger than any one individual person. And yet somehow the pursuits that each of us carry, here basically James is saying, do you realize you're gonna die one day? Now I realized when I was in my, I would hear those words, but it was never real to me. And I realized though, the older that I'm getting, my body is starting to break down. I've been balding quite a bit. I look at these old pictures and the other day, I dropped something. And so I just went down for a very easy move of just like picking up this trash that had dropped in our apartment. So I went down and I was, oh, I felt that in my thigh. And it was like my hamstring. Something happened there. Wow, that's interesting. In my body, there's this evidence that like my body is decaying, that... Now, I should probably work out some, but nonetheless, there's these realities that like, wow, I'm getting closer and closer to death. Closer and closer to what ultimately is the fate of all of us. Now, in a previous generation, I should say, there was this phrase that became very popular, which I heard from some teenagers in our church earlier that they said, don't use this phrase because none of the teenagers use this nowadays. So I said, okay, I'll just quote millennials here. Millennials, there's this phrase called YOLO. Anyone heard this phrase, YOLO? Yes. You only live once. And it was this idea, and I put a hashtag there, by the way. Some of the youth were like, hey, don't use hashtags. That's so like web 2.0. We're in web 3.0 now. Here's what YOLO basically suggests, right? You only live once, therefore make the most of your life. Kind of this carpe diem, go for it. Live as recklessly and impulsively as you might like. Now, in some ways, this is what James is saying. You only live once. Now, but here's the difference, right? Because YOLO has this mentality that you're only gonna live once, you're gonna die one day, and because you're gonna die one day, like make the most of your life to live according to your own selfish pursuits. But check out what James says. That completely reframes the way that we're supposed to approach life. That is radically different than the world that we live in. Look at what he says. He says, instead, you ought to say, instead of living with this idea of today or tomorrow, this is, I'm gonna be the captain of my own life. I'm gonna do what I wanna do and make some money. He says, instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. Now, here's basically what James is getting at. Like, do you notice what he's saying? He's saying, YOLO! But hey, YOLO is actually not a phrase that should be determined by your own selfish pursuits, where you wanna go, what money you can make. He actually reframes things, and this is what Christians believe. If you're not a Christian, this is what Christians believe, that somehow that we're a people that instead of going along the whims of my own wishes, my own selfish ambitions and pursuits, he actually says, no. It's about actually being mindful of God, of having my life and my decisions and what I do with stuff, including the money that I possess, that it's informed not by me and my desires and my whims and my wishes, but instead it's actually informed by God. In other words, you will die one day, so live with God each day. That everything that you do, your time, your energy, and your money, all of it becomes about living according to God's ways. Living in light of eternity is another way to put it. Now, this is a really difficult thing to do because most of us, we've been conditioned. The American dream, so much of it is a pursuit of the individual dreams that I have. Maybe if it's not even individual, it's the dreams that I have for my family, for my children. When you think about the American dream, most of us are probably living more according to the American dream than living according to the dreams of God. I mean, I know this now as a parent. So many of my decisions are basically so that my kids won't have to suffer, so they could get into the best schools, eat the best foods, so that they could basically go on vacations that I never got to go on. And I realized so much of my own life and my own journey, here I am and I'm raising the next generation. And I'm informed not by a prayerful disposition before God, but instead I'm informed by, gosh, I just don't want my kids to suffer the way that I did. And I don't wanna suffer the way that my parents suffered. I mean, this is the way, and of course, part of me is I'm pursuing this as the American dream. Now, is this a bad thing? Is the American dream a bad, is it bad to want nice things or to want a better life or to accumulate wealth? No, it's not bad. In the scriptures, there's tons of examples of people who ascend to all sorts of places, whether it comes with to material wealth, or vocational kind of ascendancy. There's so many examples of people who are following Jesus, who are committed to following the ways of God and are wealthy and are living according to a certain way. See, the difference is not necessarily money or what position you have or your vocation. It's this word, arrogant. Last week we talked about this idea of humility. Why is it this word arrogant? And why is this tied in with the idea of possessions and money? Why? Because at the end of the day, most of us, and the reason why Jesus and others will talk so stridently against money and the ways that money can get its hook into all of us, why? Is because what money does is it makes us arrogant. And here's what I mean by arrogant. It makes us somehow believe that I have more control over my life. It makes us lean on money for security or for status or for just wondering, like, where do I classify myself, especially in a city like New York, right? It's so easy to talk. I remember just talking to my brother, he's a lawyer, and I remember he would tell me about, like, the starting salary for a first-year lawyer at some of these big law firms in the city. And I remember when he first told me, I was like, wow, you're gonna buy me dinner a lot. Like, I was so excited, you know? And then he was just telling me about kind of where people slot year after year after year. And then he told me about when lawyers, you know, of these big law firms become partners and things like that. And so here I was, armed with this knowledge, kind of having a brother who lived in big law and that sort of thing. And so then I would meet people and I'd be like, oh, so yeah, so tell me what you do. And they'd be like, oh, I'm a lawyer. I'm like, my brother's a lawyer. Where do you work? You know, and then they would tell me about some law firm. I'll be, what year are you? And I realized, like, here I was in this weird, indiscriminate way. It was me trying to classify, like, oh, how much money do you make? Like, do you want to go get some ramen? Maybe treat me? I mean, it's interesting how so much of money, what it does is it begins to be ways that we classify one another. And ultimately, what money does, though, it makes us more secure in ourselves. I mean, this is, because money is so representative of so much, whether it's education, our background. Money becomes, in many ways, emblematic of time, energy, pursuits, talents, all of these things. And money is the clearest indicator of how to measure how we're doing. I mean, isn't it true? To actually look, because you can put a number next to it. You can put a number next to it. And as a result, whenever I can see that number ends up becoming an indicator for me of, okay, how am I doing? How is our family doing? Now, again, it's not money in particular that James is getting at. He's talking about arrogance. And this is juxtaposed with previously, last week we talked about humble yourself so that the Lord might lift you up. But what arrogance means, like humbleness, and we talked about this, humility comes from the same word that from humus, which is earth, being grounded. This is what humility is. What arrogance is not being grounded, but becoming overinflated in what I think about myself. Or underinflated based on how I measure up to that other person working in corporate when I'm working in public interest as a lawyer or whatever it might be. I mean, there's ways that we do this. Either way, the root of it is arrogance. It's arrogance because it's so self-centered. And see, what's different for a Christian than YOLO, you only live once, be impulsive, do what you want to do, is that instead of that kind of disposition, what we're supposed to be we're supposed to be a people who are so grounded in humility that arrogance is not what drives us. But instead, yes, you will die one day, but you live with God each day. That God becomes my grounding, that God becomes the one that informs what I do with my time, my energy, my words, and even with my money. Now, here's the thing though. James is about to go in now. Watch this. Look at what James says, because he's gonna be so harsh here. Look at what he says. Now listen, you rich people, you Manhattanites, and those who live in LIC, I'm just kidding, right? This whole city, right? We are the wealthiest city in arguably the world. He says, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Ouch. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. Hey, welcome to Hope Church, everyone. So glad you made it. Anyone who's new here, I'm so glad you came today. Now, why are such harsh words being used? Remember, again, it's not money in itself. It's what money does to us. It's the arrogance. It's the feelings of control. And the more money I have, and here's the crazy thing, the more money I have, it corresponds to how much more arrogant I usually get. So the reason why James and the reason why the scriptures speak against rich people is because there's something that ties together richness and wealth and arrogance. And that's why James he's pulling nothing back and he's basically saying, you rich people, the ones with money, the ones who think that somehow your money, your smarts, your education, your CV, your LinkedIn profile will save you. He's basically going at it, and here's what he's basically saying. Your money will not save you. High five your neighbor and say, your money will not save you. It will not save you. Now, here's the thing. I remember even as I was making this, I'm like, your money will not save you. And then I was like, God, my money will not save me. But can you just give me enough to survive? Just give me enough. And you know, and I was like, well, what's enough to survive? I'm like, listen, I don't know. God, you can, you know, maybe a little more than enough. And But here's what he's saying. Your money will not save you. And all these things will be corroded. And the reason why he's talking about the misery that comes to you is because here's the thing. There's the promise somehow that if you make more money, you'll be more secure. But, I mean, here's the thing. Has money ever saved anyone from death? No. All of us die one day. I mean, isn't that true? And yet somehow we've got this illusion that what money does, though, is it will somehow save us, ultimately. It's these moments where we think that the promise of the American dream, when I get this American dream, when I get more money, then life will be easy and life will be swell. And the reality is your money will not save you. Now, does money, can it accrue more happiness and more happy experiences? Yes, it can in different ways. But see, so much of that has to do with the human heart, more than it has to do with the stuff that we accumulate. And what James is basically saying is he's specifically using pointed language against the rich because it's so hard for rich people to see that they're rich. And it's so hard for rich people to admit that I'm richer than I thought, especially in a city like this. I mean, most of us, we're like, oh, Drew, this is so great. You're talking about rich people. I got to send this sermon to my boss anonymously. I'm just kidding, right? Like, I mean, this is what we think. We think those other people in the city are rich, you know? We live in Midtown here, Midtown East, and we're like, oh, those people in Chelsea, they need to hear this sermon. Those are the rich people. Those people in the Upper East Side. It's those people. And yet, you see, James is, he's talking to a group of people where it's just so easy to get lost in the security and the power and the comfort that we find in money. And he's trying to say, the reason why he's using such strong language, he's saying your money will not save you ultimately. But look at what it says. He says, you have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You've condemned and murdered the innocent one who is not opposing you. Wow. Now, he's now getting even deeper related to money. He's not only speaking to a class of people, but now he's speaking about the actual things that we do with our money. Now, what's he doing here? James is basically saying there is actually a right way to utilize money. There's a right way to do it. Now, these are the wrong ways, but he's saying there's a right way to do it. Now, most of us today, when we think about money, the most obvious way that we think about using or utilizing money is basically with this word spend. We spend our money. We get our money and then we spend it. I mean, look at what it says. He says, you've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence, fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. Here's one way that we use it. And he's saying, most of us, when we come to money, we spend it. But there's a line when it comes to spending. He's saying, most of us, we do things for self-indulgence and for luxury. Now, he's speaking to a group of people, and he's talking about the way that we actually spend our money. Now, most of us in this room, most of us are probably, especially living in a place like New York, think, oh yeah, you know, I don't just spend my money, I invest it, or I use it to generate more wealth, or I save my money. I mean, isn't this what we think? We think, oh yeah, of course. That's such a simplistic way of thinking. Most of us, like, we're not about just spending. It's basically utilizing our money to invest it and make more money or to do something else with it. But notice, right? Look at what else he says. It's not only about luxury and self-indulgence. He says, you have hoarded wealth in the last days. Woo. It's also not only about spending the way that we spend, it's also about the ways that we save. Now, coming from an immigrant mentality, I was basically like, I'm in the camp of basically like, hey, just, you know, spend very, very little. And then you got to save as much as you can. What are we saving for? Don't ask questions. Just save it. Okay, how much money do we have? Listen, just be quiet. We're saving.
And I mean, saving was such a significant part. Now, here's the thing. Some of us might be like, yeah, saving, there's actually wisdom to it. In fact, in the Proverbs, it talks about the wisdom of saving money and things like that. But notice, if there's anything that's better than spending that most of us will say, it's actually saving or reinvesting or something like that, right? It's basically like we need to save, and we put that ahead of spending. We say, save before you spend. But notice what James is saying. James is saying, actually, it's not only spending that we need to be mindful of God, but it's actually in saving, because it's so easy for us to hoard wealth. Now, why? Because saving or spending, both of these basically have its root in this arrogant way of just thinking about ourselves. Now, what do we do then? If both saving and spending are things that we're not supposed to do, or at least we're supposed to do them, but we're supposed to do it mindful of God, what is it? Look at what he says. He gets at this third thing. He says, the wages you failed to pay the workers, the cries of the harvesters. See, he's going against spending, and he's going against saving, and he's basically saying, you have not been generous. You have utilized your money for yourself. And you have saved for yourself. And it's so easy to just get so arrogant, because so much of the ways that you approach life and your own money is for yourself. And he's saying that people are crying out. Why? Because you have not been generous. Now, if you've been around our church for a while, you know that the way that we talk about money that we think that honors God the most is basically give first, then save, then live off the rest, then spend. Give, save, spend. Now, some of you are like, oh, this is where the pastor's going to make this. He's going to say, we need your money. And I have no intention of saying, hey, give to our church. Actually, Dave, I should probably say give to our church. I should say. But, and listen, our books are open when it comes to money and all that stuff. But the principle, whether you give to Hope or whether you give to another cause that you love, the principle is about being detached from the ways that money can cause an arrogant, self-sufficient, self-reliant kind of core that begins to grow in us. The one way that we get free from those attachments, the one way that we can actually say, God, I want to live according to your ways, is to actually to start giving your money away. And what James is saying is, like, when you can give your money away, especially to charitable causes, you are doing the right thing with your money, as opposed to the ways in which you've simply built for yourself what will corrode one day. Now, this past week, I was actually, we partner with a ministry called St. Paul's House, which works with youth as well as does a feeding program for those in need through our city in Hell's Kitchen. Daisy Takuri, she's actually our youth director, but she also works over at St. Paul's House. And so twice a month on Fridays, I go and I volunteer on Friday mornings to just help serve as well as to lead a Bible study for the group of people that come. Now, this was Friday, so Friday morning, I came and I wore my Knicks hat, which is like my favorite hat. And if anyone knows, the Knicks vanquished the Philadelphia 76ers on Thursday. Yes, amazing. So I was so excited. I was so excited about this on Thursday. And I wore my Knicks hat and I showed up on Friday to serve. And so here I am, I'm wearing like my favorite hat. And I'm leading this Bible study in front of this group of people who had just come in for food, and we're serving them food and that sort of thing. And so here I was, and I was basically sharing. And then this one woman says, oh, go Knicks! I hope they beat the Sixers. And I said, they did! They won last night! We've advanced to the second round. And then I gave her a high five. And she goes, we did! That's amazing! And then she goes, can I have your hat? I was like, whoa. And it stunned me in that moment because I was so elated. Then she goes, can I have that hat? And I was like, oh, I was like, oh, like the one I'm wearing right now? She goes, yeah, the Knicks hat right there. And I was like, okay, oh. And then I was like, ah. And then I said, this is my favorite hat. And then this other guy who we're serving food to, this other guy goes, oh, the pastor doesn't want to give his hat away. And I was like, oh, and then I felt so much pressure. I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, oh, this. Now I feel so much social pressure. I mean, could you imagine in this moment? I'm like. So then I took off my hat. I looked at it. And I gave her the hat. So here you go. Listen, there were a lot of mixed motives there. You don't need to clap. I mean, what was I supposed to do? This guy's calling me out. He's like, aren't you a pastor? I'm like, yeah, just, here's my favorite hat. I had been looking forward to wearing that hat the whole day because we had just won. You know what I'm saying? Like going around the city, go next, you know, and everyone's like pointing it out. And I was so excited about that. Here it was. I was like, it's my hat. And then I was like, let's pray, everyone. You know, like as I was thinking about this and I'm preparing for this message, I'm like, gosh, like, here I was so attached to this hat. And I'm like, it was a hat, you know, whatever. But I just realized in me, like, this is what our possessions do. We get so attached to these things. And even something as small as a hat. And this passage, really what God is trying to get at is, can you release? Can you surrender? Can you say, and the only way to get detached from something like our Knicks paraphernalia is to give it away. I ordered one the next day, but nonetheless, like, hey, we're in the second round, everyone. Come on, okay? Like, listen, but like, I mean, but it's so easy, right? Like even, it's so easy to get attached to stuff. See, but the one weapon that we have against the idols and the god of this city, which is mammon and money, and you and I know it, especially in Manhattan, the one way that we do this is to give it away. It's to give. To have a vision for life where before anything, before God, that the way that we live according to God's way is we give it away. Now, this is so anti-capitalism. This is so, in some ways, anti-communism. This is so anti the human heart. Because the human heart is constantly thinking about self-preservation. Now, do you see how radical this is? And for those of you who aren't Christians, you're probably like, this sounds crazy. Why would you do that? Why would anyone do that? It isn't the philosophy that we live by is only the strong survive, and you should only accumulate for yourself and take care of your own family. Now, of course, there is this idea of private property that exists within scriptures and things like that. But see, the number one way when we approach money is to actually to give it away. Because the one way that we live according to kind of a Godward disposition when it comes to our stuff is to give it away. Now, look at what James 4 says. And forgive me, I realize we're going a little longer here, but this is what it says. At the end of all this talk that he gave about today and tomorrow, look at what it says at the end of this in 4 sentences. He says, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Here's James again getting so practical. In other words, here's what James is saying, especially as it relates to money. It's not about what you say. All of us in this room can say, we can say, I am a generous person. At least I'm more generous than that person in the city. But it's not about what you say. It's about what you do. And here's the thing. Your money and my money is the easiest thing to measure when it comes down to what we do. And the question for me and for you and what James is trying to get at, it's not about what you say. It's about what you do. And the question is, what are you doing with your money when it comes to give, save, and spend? What are you doing with it? Now, so many of us, again, we can be like, well, I'm doing this and I gotta pay off this and da da da. But like at the end of the day, it's the easiest thing to measure. What are you doing with your money? What am I doing with my money? What am I doing with everything that God has given to us or to me and to our family? Believe me, the same applies to me and to everyone else. Why? Because even as a pastor, I want to hold on to my Knicks hat, my precious Knicks hat. I want to hold on to my stuff. And the one way to go against that is to actually give it away. Now, you're probably asking this question, why in the world should I do that? When none of the city does that. Everyone's all about accumulating and using it as a measuring stick for where I am in society. Why in the world should we start to give our money away? You see, this Christian ethic is so different because the Christian ethic isn't simply about doing what the rest of the world does. It's about living in such a manner that everything at our disposal, it's honoring to God. And here's what the way before God is actually that we first live towards generosity. Now, why in the world would we do that? Because we believe that God has been generous to us. We believe that God is the giver of all great things, that he's the provider. And because God is good and gracious to us, we actually don't have to be attached to money or to fame or to any of the things, the trappings that so encapsulate the human heart. Instead, we can actually be a people who are free. Look at what Jesus teaches in the Sermon on the Mount. Look at what he says. He says, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes or Knicks hats? Sorry, just added that. See how the flowers of the field grow? They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear? For the pagans or those outside of those who follow Jesus run after all these things. And your heavenly Father knows you need them. But seek first your 401k. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. All these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. I mean, isn't this a vision for life that any of us, whether you're religious or you're not, don't all of us want this vision? To be so free from the encumbrances of worry that haunt us. And money is so central to that, isn't it? See, but here's what Christians believe. Here's what Paul would write to the church in Rome. Look at this. And I love this passage. This is what we believe as Christians, that God, who did not spare his own son, but he gave him up for us all. How will this God, who would give his very life for you, how would this God also not, along with him, graciously give us all things? Do you see, Christians have this superpower. The reason why generosity exists is because we believe in a God who clothes the lilies of the field and the grass, who would not spare anything so that we can actually be free. Now, this does not mean, hey, quit your jobs and give everything. It means, of course, there's wisdom associated, but it means that the disposition of our lives, that we're not defined by that stuff. We are instead defined by a people who believe in a God who has everything in his hands and who calls us to live a different way. Would you like to know this God? Because that's the ultimate invitation. The invitation is, would you like to know a God who is so for you that even something as little as money does not need to cripple you or squelch you, but instead you can be a person who freely gives it away.